Hi, and welcome to the radio version of DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. Willie Clayton Jones is at our microphone today. Willie was the first offender to surrender doing fugitive safe surrender. We conducted fugitive safe surrender in a church, the Bible Way Church in Washington, D.C., where we invited individuals with nonviolent warrants to voluntarily surrender, to come in on their own. In some cases, after being out there for years with a warrant, we invited everybody to come in and voluntarily surrender to a church. You can see everything and hear everything about the Fugitive Safe Surrender Program in Washington, D.C. at www.dcsafesurrender.org. And again, I'll give that address, www.dcsafesurrender.org. We thought it'd be interesting to bring Willie Clayton Jones back to the microphones. He was the first person interviewed. He was the first person in line, and he gratefully consented to being interviewed and to tell the other offenders with warrants in Washington, D.C. what his feelings were and what his results were as being the first person in line to surrender at Fugitive Safe Surrender. So we thought it would be really interesting to catch up with Willie. He is now involved with our office and, in fact, with my boss, Cedric Hendricks, in terms of going out to address a variety of organizations and kids, youth organizations, about his experiences with crime in the criminal justice system and with drugs. And with that long introduction, Willie Jones, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Oh, thank you, Lynn.
Okay, Willie, where you been? What you been doing? You've been employed since the beginning of Fugitive Safe Surrender?
Yes, sir. I went through the Project Empowerment Center down at 609 7th Street Northeast, and it's been a great inspiration in my life. Since then, I've started to work with the Office of Workers' Conversation, 64 New York Avenue Northeast.
Okay, and so you've been gainfully employed is the bottom line, and you went through Project Empowerment, and tell people what Project Empowerment's all about.
Oh, it's a program started. They are with, first it was Welfare to Work, then it was Ex-Offenders Program, then they came on and started letting anyone over 21 in the program.
Right.
And you go there for 3 weeks, they give you job training, then after that they place you on a job site. They're the only program in Washington, D.C. they will pay you to go to school.
Okay. Now, when you came in on the Fugitive Safe Surrender Program, you had a warrant for a distribution of CDS, controlled dangerous substance, and that controlled dangerous substance was heroin.
Yes, sir.
Heroin. Sorry. I slipped into the vernacular. So heroin. And so you were in your prior life, what, a drug dealer?
I was a drug dealer at one point. Then I became my best customer.
Okay, and so you were using drugs and distributing drugs.
Yes, sir.
So you were caught up in that whole lifestyle.
That's right, Mr. Lynn.
And, you know, tell us about that lifestyle. A lot of people, they don't quite understand what it is in terms of being out there on the street, hustling with drugs, using drugs. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. You and I did not discuss the contents of this interview before we sat down today. But for most guys that I've talked to, it is a lot of hustle. It is a lot of danger. There's violence attached to it. You carry weapons. Other people have weapons. Other people will very quickly use force to get what they need to get. It's a violent culture of that embraces violence. And it's very hard to get out of. It's pretty easy to get into, but very hard to get out of. Now, what did I say was that's either right or wrong?
You're right. It's easy to get into, but it's hard to get away because drugs become a habit and the lifestyle also too. And it's very, very hard to get away. But what I did, I was out using, selling. And it's no future there. You know, it's always a consequences behind everything you do. You know, you're not comfortable at home. You don't know if the police come in there. You don't know if the stick-up boys come in there. If you be short with the people's money, they may come there. So it's not an easy life. You don't only jeopardize your life, your family, your parents, your kids. And for a long time, I didn't understand that when people say, when you go to jail, like my mother, my wife, my kids, they said, when I go to jail, that affected them. For a long time, I didn't believe that, but it do. Because when your kids going to school and people start to say, like, your father is a crackhead, and that affects your kids, that bothered them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not an easy task. And I would tell anybody, it's much better on this side.
Did you ever have violence directed towards you while you were out there drug dealing?
Well, to be honest, Mr. Seitz, Mr. Lynn, I've been around and I'm pretty well known and well liked. So I never really came into a position where I was really...
You had a reputation that protected you.
Well, I was just I was a gentleman. I've always been. All right. So I'll just say that. But I have been hurt right before I surrendered and turned myself in and got off these drugs. I was over in a complex called Lincoln Heights, and I got hurt over there. A guy hit me off guard and knocked me down, and I broke my right shoulder bone.
Right.
Knocked it out of place, I'd rather say.
Right, right. Now, but that was the first time that violence had been directed at you? Were there threats of violence in the past?
Well, you know, over the years, yeah, people have said things, but as long as you didn't put your hands on me, it didn't matter what you say.
All right. And if somebody put their hands on you, what would happen?
Well, I'm going to do my best to defend myself.
Right. I mean, so that's my point. My point is that when we're talking about drugs, when we're talking about being involved in that lifestyle, I mean, you know, I've talked to so many offenders throughout the years who have been shot at, beaten up, and I've spoke to offenders throughout the years who have done the shooting, who have done the beating. I mean, it's a pretty nasty, violent lifestyle that, especially if you're using drugs, and most of the people caught up in this are using drugs. So they're addicts and they're dealers, and it is just an incredibly violent situation to be in. I mean, some of the people that I've talked to almost sound like they're war veterans. They've seen so many of their friends hurt, so many of their friends killed, so many of their friends shot at. That is, they're almost numb to the violence. And that's one of the things that interests me about you, is because you seem to have come out of all of that.
And I would just like to say, if I didn't say this, it wouldn't be me. It's not so much of me. It's just that I had a praying mother and a praying sisters and brothers. And I just had mercy and grace on my life through God. I've always strongly believed in God, and that's why I'm where I'm at today. So I ain't going to say I had so much of a reputation, but I was well-known and well-liked it out there. But most of all, I had a little grace and favor on my life.
You were talking about when we did the interview for Fugitive Say Surrender, you basically said, you all know me. My name is Squid. You know who I am. So you believe or are, you know, have a good reputation or have a reputation in the subculture. People know you.
Yes, because, Lynn, I've been in the streets for over 30 years, and I'm the type of guy, when I'm out there, I just don't stay on First Street. I'd be First Street, Second Street, Southeast, Willow Road.
Moving.
I move around.
Moving.
Yeah.
Now, what did you do during all that time? Did you work? Were you engaged in the subculture the entire time?
Yeah, it's hard to hold a job when you're out there in the streets, like especially using heroin, because if you can't get that heroin, you're not going to work. So, no, basically my life, I hung out on the corners and sold drugs. I have worked, but never a stable job like a man should have.
Now, if you talk about all the different crimes that you were involved in throughout this time period. Now, I've talked to guys, you know, when you're out on the corner, it is a matter of what happens. It is a matter of what comes up. If you have an opportunity, and oftentimes it's a group opportunity for a burglary, to take stolen property and resell it, for a robbery, for an assault, for a rape, stuff happens when you're on the corner.
Yes, sir.
How many crimes do you think you have been involved in all these years?
How many crimes have I been involved in?
Yeah. Or do you've seen or you've witnessed? I mean, I talked to one guy one time. Actually, I'm sorry. It was a woman who said that she was hustling for decades on the street between the shopliftings and the stolen property and the drug sales and, you know, threatening others and having themselves be threatened. She said that she was involved in hundreds of crimes a year. Now, technically speaking, crimes a year, you know, thefts, fencing stolen goods, shoplifting, you name it, she did it because she was on the corner. And when you're on the corner, you get involved in lots of different stuff.
Yeah, that's true. But all of my charges have always been drugs. I've never been into robbing. Yeah, I've had shoplifted before, but I've only mainly sold drugs and gambled. And I've never been into robbing because I have a parents. And then I know it's the consequences behind all of that. So I never wanted my track record to be worse than it was, like robbery, kidnap, drugs, and you know, rape and all that. Mm-hmm. I just didn't do. All right.
So you were involved, you had a personal code that you weren't going to cross that line.
Right, right.
Now, you mentioned your religion, and many, many, many offenders who have crossed the bridge, I always refer to it as crossing a bridge, from that old lifestyle to a crime-free, drug-free, work every day, take care of your kids, pay your taxes, be a good community member. Crossing that bridge involves a religious experience.
Yeah, see, that's something for real, Mr. Lynn, that I always wanted to do was live a normal life, but I didn't know how. So once I got a God of my understanding and I prayed and I just listened to some of my family members, and see, then a lot of people are afraid of change. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to change. It's not easy to change. But I'm here to tell anybody, if you change your thinking, mm-hmm. you can change your behavior, mm-hmm. and I guarantee it'll change your life.
Now, how do you change that? I mean, you know, the difficulty is that, you know, you get these 15-year-old kids, 16, 17, 18, because I did gang counseling years ago on the streets of Baltimore City, where I was out on the streets in the evenings with the gangs. And you take a look around at these 15-year-old, 16-year-old, 17-year-old, all the way up to 25. And, you know, a lot of these kids are just willingly throwing their lives off a cliff. They don't know how to make that break. They don't know how to get from point A to point B. If you said to them, what about a drug-free existence? What about going back and getting your high school diploma? What about getting job training? They all acknowledge that that's what they wanted. They just didn't know how to do it. It was just an issue for them. They just didn't know how to cross that bridge. Even with my assistance, the crossing that bridge became real difficult.
Yeah, well, what you have to do, you got to be a willing participant. You need to have someone to sit down and talk with you or talk to you in a group. And I've always said experience is the best teacher. Somebody that been through something and sit down with some of these young kids that's coming up today and have something to offer. Like a good thing, I think, is Project Empowerment. Mm-hmm. They pay you to go to school to get your GED.
Right, right.
They will, once they get you into their program and you stay there for 3 weeks, they're going to pay you. Then they set you up on a job site. Then they got some real good facilitators there. Mm-hmm. And maybe if you can get four or five guys like I to come in and speak with them, mm-hmm. and just show them what I've been through, and you don't have to live like this today if you don't want to. It's all up to you.
Well, the puzzling thing to me, though, Willie, is the fact that you can go into any drug dealer's house and it'll be a wreck. I don't care how much money they've made. They don't have it anymore. They spent it all. They look like they're living in poverty. Their homes are in complete disarray. Their lives are in complete disarray. A lot of them have been shot at. So a lot of them have been beaten up. A lot of them have been shot. Isn't their example enough? I mean, we have legions of kids who seem to be coming up and saying, yeah, I'll take the place of the guy who got arrested, and I'll work the corner. I'll work the business. And doesn't the example of all these guys who are living these incredibly impoverished lives, even though they're drug dealers, isn't that example enough to stay out of it? And obviously the answer is no, because kids throughout the country constantly get involved in the drug trade.
And I'm glad you said that, Lynn, because see, if you look at, like you say, the house is in array, the money and stuff is no longer there, so that should show you right there that it's time for a change. The corners is through. You're wasting your time standing out there. Ain't but two things going to happen. You're either going to jail for life or you're going to get murdered. Right. They're killing people right here in the streets every day. I had a son that was murdered in 06.
I'm very sorry to hear that. How many kids do you have, Willie?
Well, I have five kids.
And you had a son who was
murdered. No, I have four kids now. I'm sorry. I had five kids. One of my sons was murdered. Yeah, right in on First Street.
I'm so very sorry to hear that.
Yes, and I'm really hurt behind it, but things happen in life. See, you got to go through something to get to something. That's how I get where I'm at today. I've been going through some things all my life, and I just made a constant decision to change my life. And ever since I made that decision on November the 1st that I was tired of living the way I was living.
Right before you turned yourself into Fugitive Safe Surrender.
Yes, sir. And I knew that it was more to life than just getting up every day, standing on a corner and chasing drugs and putting drugs into your body. That people, you'll go down on a corner and buy drugs from people that you never seen in your life and go home and use it. And what I try to tell people is, that's not what normal people do. Normal people don't walk down on a corner and buy something from someone that they never seen in their life and walk around a corner and snort it up their nose or put it in their arm or put it on a can or on a stem and use it. Normal people don't do that.
Now, but you tell that to the average 17-year-old, 18-year-old, 15-year-old, 14-year-old, and they don't hear that.
Well, the only thing I could do is keep repeating. See, where I'm at today, Lynn, I would like to save everybody's life. But as long, if I could get 30 guys in a room, if I could get to one, I feel like my job has been done. I would like to save them all, but some of us got to die for some of us to live. And I would like to, if I could just get to one, and that one may rub off on the other ones, because some kids, see, most kids these days do what they see. If they see their parents doing this and doing that, that make them think it's okay. But if you get one good person and turn their life around and the other kids in the neighborhood see that, I'm almost sure that that will make a difference in that neighborhood.
You know, that's the most difficult thing within criminology, the most difficult issue. And that is, we can reach out and be fairly successful with the 30-year-olds. We can reach out and be fairly successful for the 40-year-olds. Because how many times, especially in terms of heroin, how many times have I heard I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired? So when you reach that point at 35 or 40 where the junkie tells you he's sick and tired of being sick and tired, you can reach him. Reaching the 15 to 25-year-old, however, is the most difficult thing in criminology. Somebody's going to win the Nobel Prize when they can figure out how to reach the soul and the psyche and the heart of that 17-year-old. And so far, we have not been really good at doing that.
Well, over the years, I've heard Jesse Jackson said, if you get to be 25 years old in the streets of Washington, you're a senior citizen. So if I could get to one kid that's 20 or 25, I believe in my heart that I can make a difference in his life. And he can, once his friends see him changing, like I said once before, I believe they'll change. But like you say, Mr. Sykes, it ain't easy. And the only thing I can do, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm going to keep sharing with my kids and the people that I see in the neighborhoods or on my way to work, on the bus or on the train or when I'm riding with my wife. I just keep giving them my story and letting them know it's more to life than this. You don't have to live like that. You don't have to be a thug. Those are choices that you made. And the same way you make bad choices, if you just take that negative and put it into a positive, things will get better in your life. And I'm right here to tell you. I know when I came in self-surrender on November the 1st, I was homeless. I didn't have a job. I was just becoming my drug habit. And since then, I just kept taking all my negative and put it into a positive. All the things I did negative, I just get up and go to work every day. And I just wanted to share this with people. I work through a program called Project Empowerment. I get $7.50 an hour, but I know it's a bigger picture coming.
Right.
So what I do, I just get up every day, go to work, just keep showing up. And my job have offered me a 26-term position, but some things go along with it as far as me, I have to get my driver's license, but that's not bad. And then, you know, one day I was on my way to work, and I was complaining. That was nothing but the devil kicking up in me. I was complaining, and I said, wait a minute. 2 weeks ago, I didn't have a job. And a guy like me, I'm complaining, and I'm grateful. And from that day to this day, which is April the 16th, I am grateful for the job that I have through Project Empowerment. I got my own apartment now. My kids are happy. Me and my wife is back together.
That's great.
We've been separated for, 5 years? And we go. I don't send my family to church today. We go to church together as a family.
I hear you.
And I'm just letting you know that you can change. If a guy like me can change, anybody could change. And I love to be on the corner. And I love to sell drugs.
You know, that's just the interesting part of it that people don't quite understand, is that it is a high. Being on that corner, interacting, selling, the threat of violence. You know, I've talked to burglars who just really, they love the concept of going into that home. It is a rush.
Yeah, and see, just
and,
like,
and selling drugs and being on the corner is a rush.
Yeah, and just like me, Lynn, don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here preaching because I'm not all the way well yet either. When I say that, it's some days I find myself on the corner by my job over on New York Avenue,
mm-hmm.
talking to some of the guys that I used to socialize with. Mm-hmm. But one thing I don't do, I don't stay long. I speak, socialize, because I know how
and move on.
I know how that corner can get.
It's all seductive. I mean, you know, one of the problems in terms of understanding this whole problem is that people say, why crime? When everybody, you know, there's a certain point where every person involved in the game, every person involved in the lifestyle says, man, that's deadly. It's nowhere. It's just going to suck you in and spit you out. You're going to be dead or in prison. Everybody says that at a certain age. But yet it is so seductive. People say, why do you do it then if it's so terrible? Because quite frankly, it beats working at a minimum wage job. It is a rush. It is a high, literally. You're interacting with a whole bunch of guys, and there's just a I don't know how to put it. There's just a general high being on the corner, interacting with friends, and even though the citizens don't like it, and they call the cops and say, whatever you do, get them off the corner. There's something powerful about and seductive about that whole lifestyle.
Yeah, because it becomes a habit. When you can constantly do something for 20, 30 years every day, the same thing. And believe me, hanging on the corner is just like a heroin habit. That is a habit.
Yeah.
But you, at some point in your life, you got to break that habit.
Oh, I agree. But I mean, the problem is that we're not talking about scuba diving, or we're not talking about horseback riding, and we're not talking about running. We're talking about behaviors that destroy cities.
Yeah.
Behaviors that destroy schools, behavior that destroys families, behavior that is just as a plague, if you will, upon any metropolitan area, yet at the same time, it is seductive to the people involved in it, and they like it. Why are they there? Why are they out hustling on a freezing January day? Because, quite frankly, it's almost enjoyable.
But
it's almost a high unto itself.
Yeah, but just like I said at first, Lynn, if you can get them to change their thinking, that'll change their behavior, and that would change their life. Because there's no future on the corner.
Yeah, but it's so seductive. I mean, we say there's no future, yet they do it anyway.
Yeah, it's hard. But you know what I believe? If we could get something, because when I was young, I always wanted a job, but they were hard to get. If we could get something for these kids to do and these young adults to do,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, I'm almost sure, because see, a lot of them ain't going to tell you, but if you can get them a job, the same way they hit that corner, they'll go to work. But you just got to give them something to look forward to.
Well, you've said a variety of things throughout this program. You talked about making sure that they have opportunities for work, making sure that they have opportunities for somebody older and wiser to talk to them, making sure that they know the consequences, although it's almost impossible for them not to know the consequences. Spiritual involvement is something that's turned around your life and has turned around the lives of an awful lot of offenders. The faith-based issue does work. I mean, there's a lot of people who are not thugging and they're not out there selling. They're in church, or they're at the synagogue, or they're at the mosque, which is where they should be. Everybody should be, I suppose. But it's a lot better than being on the corner. So there's a variety of things you're putting on the table today that make an awful lot of sense.
Yeah, but like I said at first, if you don't, well, I'm going to say this. If you don't stand for something, you're going to fall for anything. Mm. So I don't have a problem with what kind of religions that a person have, whether it's Baptist, Allah, Jock, God, or whatever. But get into something, something positive that will make your life better.
Surround yourself with positive people. When you surrendered on that first day at Fugitive Safe Surrender, being first in line, you had your family with you.
Yes.
And you had your wife with you.
No, my wife wasn't
with me. Oh, I'm sorry, but you had your sisters with you?
Yeah, my sister and a close friend of mine.
And a close friend of yours. Yes. And they said to me at the time, I think he's ready. I think he's finally ready. He's finally ready to break out of that lifestyle and become a productive, sober citizen. Is that what it takes to have family members support you and encourage you and insist that you get out of the game?
Yeah, that means a lot. Your family support means a lot. And it gives you something to think about, and it gives you a hope, and it makes your life better. Yeah. Yeah, you need your family. You really do. Your folks is all you got.
When you and Cedric go out and talk to these groups, I mean, do you have something special in mind to say to these to our kids in terms of their involvement in drugs, in crime, in the criminal justice system? What do you think is going to be your primary message? You've given me a bunch of messages throughout this program. What's going to be your primary message? What do you think is really going to enter their psyches and help them make the right decision?
I'm going to talk to them about me. I'm going to tell them where I was and where I'm at today. And one of my main topics is going to be, if you change your thinking, it'll change your life. And I guarantee you. And I learned that when I was in a treatment program over at Harbor Light Salvation Army. It was a guy there by the name of Walter Askew. He was a great impact in my life. And he always shared that with me. And one day I was trying to figure out a way to get out of treatment. And he was telling me, he said, Willie, I understand. Don't nobody want to be where they need to be. And It's just that I don't know what I'm going to say, how I'm going to say it, but I'm going to put my right foot forward and talk about me and tell them how I was and where I'm at today and try to get in the blessing line like me, far as, see, you got to do something to get something.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to turn your life around, you just got to do some things. And I just want to share this with you. One day, back on, I can't recall the day, but about a month or so ago, I was on my way to a funeral, and I saw this guy eating out the trash can. So I walked up to him and asked him, brother, is you all right? Is anything I can do to help you? So he mumbled a few things, and then he told me, he said, I'm from Philadelphia, and I don't know how I wind up in Washington, D.C. So I said to him, I said, man, you're not from Philadelphia. He said, yes, I am. I said, well, who you know in Philadelphia? So to make a long story short, he gave me his mother's phone number. Mm-hmm. And I called the lady. She said, son, you's a heaven sent from angel, because I haven't talked to my son since January.
Mm-mm-mm.
She said, just by talking to him and looking at him, that you could tell that his mind is bad and he has seizures. So anyway, I took him to this church that I was headed to a funeral. My sister's husband, mother had passed. So I turned him over to the church, and they supposed to clean the guy up and send him back to Philadelphia.
That's great. And you did the right thing in the right way. And so that's, Willie, I think that's the most impressive thing about you. You have left that old lifestyle behind that was destructive, and you've entered a new lifestyle that is so enriching to our community, so enriching to our life. And I think that's the success, and that's what inspires me about you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I've been talking to Willie Clayton Jones. Willie was the very first person to surrender during the Fugitive Safe Surrender program in November of 2007. If you want to listen to Willie's interview with me as the first person who surrendered, or if you want to see any television coverage of Mr. Jones, he was kind enough to do TV coverage as well to encourage other people to surrender. You can see it at www.dcsafesurrender.org. www.dcsafesurrender.org. I want everybody to have yourselves a very pleasant day.